Oh, Brad, what have you done now?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Brad Gilmore Show. On demand. Amazing episode for you today. I feel like we've had a run of pretty good episodes, you know, with Peter Melman, Spike Ferriston, Chingo Bling, John Rocha, and others, you know, and now I'm excited. This might be the most excited I've been for an interview to give to the world, because today I have the privilege of interviewing Jason David Frank. Jason David Frank, also known as JDF, was the star of the popular television show in the 1990s, a little show called The Power Rangers. I think we've heard of it. He was the star of The Power Rangers. He played Tommy Oliver, the Green Ranger, and then went on to play the White Ranger. And he was in a multitude of the Power Rangers spinoffs. I think Zeo, Dino Thunder. He was in a multitude of them, but he will always be remembered as the Green Ranger first and foremost. We sat and we talked about MMA. We talked about him and CM Punk. Will that fight ever happen? We talk about his days as the Green Ranger, his days as the White Ranger. So many things. The time he almost got killed at Comic-Con, someone tried to come after him. So many things. I have to say this about Jason Frank. This guy, you know, and we talk about it in the interview, but this guy is so giving. And he sat there on the phone with me for about 40 minutes when he didn't even have to. And I really appreciate him for that. I can't express my gratitude enough for all of my guests. But Jason definitely was an incredible interview, gave me so much more than I had even anticipated. Like I said, we talk about all things. We talk about the Power Rangers movie, stuff he has coming up, a lot of awesome stuff. So I'm not going to bore you too much on this intro. We're going to get right into it. We're going to get into my conversation with Jason David Frank, famously portraying Tommy Oliver in the Power Rangers series, the Green and White Ranger. He needs no introduction, so I'm going to stop while I'm ahead. Y'all check out this interview and enjoy. Jason, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me, buddy.
Hey, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. You got so much going on. I know you're a very busy guy. When we spoke yesterday, you said you were in the you were teaching a class. Is that right? Was that over at the Rising Sun School?
Yeah, I was. I was actually training with one of my buddies, Mike. He's a fighter, and so he was just training me a little bit, and I was in the middle of class, so just a little mental break. I love martial arts. I've been doing it my whole life, so without it, I kind of go a little crazy, to be honest.
Yeah, it's your release, I would guess. You know,
yeah.
You know, it's funny. You know, mixed martial arts is definitely, you know, my favorite sport right now. But so, what all do you teach over there at the Rising Sun School?
At Rising Sun, we teach pretty much a mixed blend of martial arts. I mean, we do boxing, we do, you know, jiu-jitsu. We specialize in all the weapons too. So we do like nunchucks, bow staff. I mean, we do a little bit of almost everything, which is keeps it more fun, interesting. You know, kids and adults have a great time because, like I said, exercising your brain, not just your body, is what people, I think, need to do on both. Physically sometimes is draining, but mentally, to challenge yourself, to learn different moves and flinging weapons around and fighting, it's a different thing. I love it.
How long has the school been open?
Oh, we've been open for a long time. I mean, I think we're celebrating, Rising Sun Karate celebrating 20 years in January.
Wow.
Out here, we've been here for about 13 years. You know, so it's great. I mean, we have over 700 students at one of our locations, and, you know, boxing, and just a tremendous, awesome staff over there.
And how hands-on are you with all the training that goes on over at the school? Are you there as much as you can be every other day? What's your schedule like over there?
Well, I've trained these guys. They've shadowed me for years that I was out here. When I was filming Dino Thunder 2, I came out here and trained my staff. It's very important to have a really good trained staff to do it the way you would do it. So I trained these guys for, you know, 5 to 10 years, even some longer than that. And so as far as on hands, I usually train the staff. And then when I go in, it's just a surprise. I go in and just grab a regular class, or I love teaching little 4-year-olds, you know, the little kids class. I love teaching those classes. So you know, as much as I can. My schedule's been really overwhelming. I actually only had about 2 weeks off in July. All the other, you know, in between that the fans aren't seeing of me filming stuff that I can't disclose yet, that will be huge things coming up. So in between all the stuff they see me on Instagram, I'm actually filming and doing a lot of other stuff that they can't see. So I'm almost, you know, double busy than what people think.
No, I know you're all over the place. You're all over the place. So you originally are born in California, that's right?
Yeah, originally born in California.
What made you move down to Houston?
Well, I met Tammy out there, or I met Tammy here, my wife, and then we flew, you know, went to L.A. She came to L.A. and ran the Rise of Sun Karate in L.A., and then my daughter was born, Jenna, and then so I brought, you know, Jenna out here in Texas, close to Tammy's family, so there was a California family, a Texas family, and to be honest, California is great, I love it, but I kind of left the industry a little while, you know, just the movie industry. I just think that there was a lot of fake people out there. There wasn't a lot of real people, genuine people. Everything seemed to be driven by money and what you can do and how you can benefit them. So I just get really tired of the LA mentality. Moved out here to Houston and it was great. I mean, 10 years ago when I moved out here, or actually 12, I had a school open out here and, students loved it. And then it's funny because I filmed Dino Thunder and Power Rangers wasn't what it used to be when I was here 10, 12 years ago. Now it's just, you know, blown up now because of the age and because of, you know, you can have an old car in the garage and it won't be worth anything until it's a classic. So 20 years is the magic mark for stocks, bonds, cars, television shows, all that stuff. So we just hit it to be a classic and the Netflix started, you know, taking it off. And then the owner, Chaim Saban, came back to buy the brand back after I worked for Disney on Dino Thunder. And then, he's smart about it. He knows what the fans want. And now here we are. And also social media is one of the things that we necessarily really didn't have when we were doing the show. You know, it was old fashioned meet and greets. I wasn't even really over the phone, to be honest. I did a lot of old fashioned typewriter stuff back 25 years ago. So that's, so we were the number one show without social media, which was pretty cool.
No, yeah, and I definitely want to talk about the show, but since you're an MMA guy and you love martial arts, I got to ask your opinion on the big fight going down in August. What are your thoughts about Conor and Mayweather?
It's funny because you can go on Instagram and Facebook, and I'm usually really neutral, and I usually spin it off on them and ask them what they think. Conor McGregor, I think, first of all, we'll start with both of them have the same attitude. They both have the same cockiness attitude, which is fine for them. That works for them. They're both highly confident that they're not going to lose. But Mayweather's a boxer, and I know a lot of people are like, yeah, Mayweather can move. He can dodge. He can run really well. And I say run doesn't mean that he can't fight. I'm just saying he moves like a boxer. I know McGregor, has the power enough to knock him out. Some people are calling McGregor in the fourth round of winning. I just know that whoever's going to lose is going to be really sad because they both have that same mentality, And I just know if it was a good fight, then it's going to be another fight, like probably number two, that's going to even be more of a box office draw, depending on how the fight goes. So I would imagine a number two fight already, even if someone lost or won, they're going to be so adamant and strong about their opinions, how, they got ripped off and this didn't happen unless someone just coldly knocked someone out. And it was just, you can't hide it, So, that's my thoughts. I mean, as far as Mayweather going into MMA, forget it. I mean, you have eight limbs, you have your feet, your knees, your fist, your elbows. Those are the eight with the, Muay Thai. And then you have jiu-jitsu, takedowns, wrestling, he's Mayweather sticking to boxing and, Gregor is the one that said he'll do it. And so I give him credit, but they're getting, a ton of money for fighting. And it's pretty crazy.
Oh, it's out of this world how much money they're going to get in one night. It's going to be a
boxing,
spectacle.
I know, compared to UFC.
Oh, that's what kills me. That's what kills me. These UFC guys, they go out there, they put their lives on the line. These are gladiators.
Yep.
And, UFC doesn't pay them, in my opinion, nearly enough money for the damage they're putting on their body. I mean, it's ridiculous when you see what some of these payouts are. I mean, it's absolutely...
Oh, I know.
Oh, ridiculous.
That's why I think that it was ridiculous with CM Punk getting a payout of $500,000 in royalties of, I'm sure a percentage of his video games. Like, you know, a lot of my friends, you know, Derek the Black Beast, all my friends, sparring partners are in the UFC now. And a lot of my friends are in that industry. And it's just they work so hard to be entitled to say, hey, I'm a UFC fighter, versus just someone coming off the scene and just signing up and no fights, 0-0-0. It doesn't, you know, it's not an inspiring. That's why a lot of CM Punk took hate. I didn't. I thought it'd be a good fight. You know, sell tickets. It'd be a lot more fun than his last fight. I mean, you know, Mickey's a strong, strong dude. And, you know, Mickey's climbing up now. But compared to what Mickey Gall got, I think like 10 grand or something, Punk got paid out 500,000. Probably made well over a million just with the video games and all that stuff. So you have a fighter like Gall getting 10 grand and other people, I think you're right. I mean, as far as the damage on their body and, you know, the fights they give are really awesome, but it's just, you know, Dana to Dana, and that's just what it is, I guess.
Yeah, you know, the fights they give are awesome because, you know, they're giving you the fights that you want to see, but you talk about a guy like Derek Lewis. I remember talking to Derek Lewis like a couple years ago, and he's like, I just want to pay for my house. That's all I want to do.
Yeah.
And you know, yeah. And I respect the hustle of the UFC fighter, but you also see a lot of guys like the Rory McDonalds of the world. They're saying, you know what, screw this. I'm going to go over to Bellator and try to make as much money as I can in a short amount of time. So, you know,
yep.
It's the MMA game right now, but I do wish,
yeah.
You know, I think a big blockbuster fight would have been you and CM Punk. I think that you could have made that happen.
Yep. I mean, the matchmaker wanted it, you know, a manager wanted it. I heard Dana was interested, but it came down to that one person who just decided to pick someone else. And I understand. I mean, I see him even after cons and I see him at conventions and, that's fine. I mean, you don't even acknowledge me. I have nothing bad to say about Punk. And I know the media keeps putting it out there. Like, Jason wants to fight. Media is like, but let me tell you, if I put a little bit more pressure on him, I could have got it like McGregor and Mayweather. You just got to keep the pressure on social media. And I didn't, because I didn't want to be what everyone was saying. He's a bully. It's like, how can you bully someone in the UFC, guys? This is what it takes to make a fight. The hype, the push, the fans want to see it. I mean, I did the, couple interviews for MMA outlets, and they said they had the biggest ratings of all times, me coming on the show and talking about Punk and the most hits and the most everything. So it made sense financially, but, you know, Dana said he didn't want to make it a circus and pony show or whatever. Well, he signed Punk. I mean, I got experience, so I'm a lot more experienced than Punk is.
Yeah. I mean, at least you had a record. You know,
yeah.
I've been training your entire life, and, you know, I work
in training and
yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was just saying it's hard. It's like me saying, okay, well, now I'm going to be, you know, a radio guy and I don't know anything about it. Just give me a few months and I'll do a pro position. It's kind of like, you know, being a pro is not going to take you 16 to 18 months to train. And nobody's going to respect the fact that you're just going to come in and now I'm going to do UFC. It's not it's not WWE either. And those guys, I give them credit. I have a lot of friends that do that. They're legit. They do some really hard stuff that I probably couldn't do, but it's a different scene inside the cage than doing WWE, you know?
No, and, you know, I work with Booker T here in Houston, you know, WWE Hall of Famer, and Book, when we saw this CM Punk fight, he said, you know, in wrestling, it's a physical sport, obviously, but you're trying to go out there and simulate combat and protect the other guy. In UFC, you're going out there to try to hurt the other guy, and you saw in that fight with Mickey Gall, CM Punk found out real quick that this isn't, you know, sports entertainment.
Yeah. Well, the walkout, I'm sure, felt the same to him. So that put him out to the, this is the walkout. The only difference is when you go in that cage and they close it, you have to get back to reality and think, okay, there's one person that's going to walk from this cage with the win. It's not two. So you can either be the hunter or be the hunted. You know, you can either be the one going after the deer or you can be the deer running away from the lion. You know, so unless you have a really good fight and they're both hunters, you're going to have a real good fight. That's why, you know, if Mayweather just stood toe-to-toe with McGregor, I'm sure he'll get knocked out. But you can't – sometimes you have to be smart about how you do your stuff, you know. And that means however they do it to win, it doesn't matter how they won. They just got the W. And that's the – I guess that's what people, you know, fighters are looking at, I guess.
Yeah, you know, they're just trying to win. But for you, do you have any desire to get back into the octagon?
You know, man, I've been training. Like I said, Mike Bonzulis is a friend of mine, and he's been training some of the fighters up there that are fighting his card in August. You know, I'm super. If I would, I would have to like change my whole lifestyle, because I don't want to be that guy that says, oh, you know, I took this fight on short notice and I lost because of this and that. I'd really have to just cancel so many shows and so many things to do. And my schedule is so packed right now that unless it was like a punk fight or unless it was like, you know, a big headliner fight like that, and not about money. I mean, I told UFC clearly I'd fight him for a dollar to make the contract legal because, you know, I'm financially secure. I thought it'd be great for social media. You know, it's a good, it's just fun to do. And that's what it's about. It's not even about the money. If someone offered me, you know, well, someone said $100 million. I mean, those guys in a fight. But I'm saying in general, you know, it's just about what I'd like to do. And I'm still staying, keeping my tools sharp. You know, I mean, we'll see. I mean, I'm 43, man. It's like one of those things where just, you know, it had to be the right thing. And, you know, I still got a lot of a bang in me. So that's not an issue. You know, I don't have a lot of wear and tear, you know, through the fight industry, and you don't have 100 amateur fights. That's the stuff that ruins your body, you know, the wear and tear on it. So, but if it was interesting, it'd be interesting if there was a match or there was someone that wanted to spar or, you know, fight, I definitely would, but I'd have to want it. This industry, the MMA industry is just, they're honestly just politics, and a lot of them are just, you know, babies over stuff. I'm sure everyone's going to be mad at me now, but it is just that the industry is just so sour, and it's not like that in just MMA. It's like that skydiving. It's like that in wind tunnels. You have your own little cliques of people that think they're better than other people, and you just, it's just, guys, it's the same sport. Let's just go out there, best man win, bang, go. So there's little, you know, cliques of people around town, and that's one thing I don't miss about the industry. I like fighting and training. I don't like the politics and the BS of it, to be honest.
No, I mean, no, politics suck. We all can agree on that.
I know.
Politics are just awful. So, you know, you talk about there's a lot of stuff you're doing right now. I know your schedule's slam-packed. I would think that this year, I mean, it's really been the renaissance of the Power Ranger. You talked about it, you know, 20 years is that you know, cutoff, is that period where a car becomes a classic and everything. Did you ever expect, you know, I heard rumors for years they were going to do this Power Rangers reboot. First off, did you expect it would really happen? And two, I saw the film. I thought it was a great movie. I really enjoyed it. Did you think that it would have the impact that it did, you know, to bring the Power Rangers back and for Netflix to be a thing, and then you're everywhere all over the place? Did you really think that first off, I guess, did you think that the series would have this staying power?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, did you?
I think from, you know, when I started the show, I was hired for 10 episodes, and
that was just 10.
That was it. Yeah, I came in, and the Green Ranger was going to be for 10 episodes, and he was going to lose his power, and then that's kind of what happened. I lost my power, and then I went in to sell them another TV show called VR Troopers, which at that time was called Cybertron, so I shot the pilot, and that was my own show, and, you know, then people started writing into the network and saying we miss Jason, and, you know, we you know, literally kids were calling, like, the parents were calling, saying that my kids won't eat, they won't go to school, they, you know, they're, like, rebelling, and network was worried, so they brought me back to the TV show, and they brought me back as the White Ranger. But back then, and that's like I do now, I kind of focus on what I do today to make it better tomorrow. You know what I mean? That's why I like even making sure that I'm on time for you. I was like, good thing I'm with my emails. I was like, boom. So I try to do the best I can for today to make it better tomorrow. And that's kind of been my whole mentality through the whole entire thing. I went back to Dino Thunder when Disney owned it. You know, now Dino Thunder is becoming, you know, cause that was, I think 13, 14, something years ago. And now Dino Thunder is becoming a big thing. So I have, you know, my daughter's friends coming over who are 13, 14, 15 going, man, he's the goat. You know, we didn't have hashtag goats. I didn't know what that meant. You know, greatest of all times. I didn't know what that meant. Like, hey kid, don't call me a goat. But, you know, the kids are excited on that age group. And now, you know, with the Nickelodeon and the movie, we have little kids. I'm signing autographs for little kids and everybody. But I'm also, you know, brand myself different because I'm driven from passion. I don't need the finance end of it. I mean, out of schools, I'm fine. That had nothing to do with money. I started conventions, Comic Cons for fun, you know? And so looking back at Power Rangers, when Netflix picked it up and started rebooting it, I knew, you know, I've always branded myself for years, even when the brand was down, I was the only one doing Comic Cons. I was the only one saying, hey, I'm proud of who I am. Now everyone does, which is fine, but everyone's proud of something after seeing numbers. But I was proud before the reboot, before Saban bought it back. I was proud when the ratings were going down the drain. You know what I mean? I was still proud when I couldn't get an interview for Dino Thunder on Network Disney, and I only got one interview to promote. No one else wanted the interviews, but I stayed strong to who I was and my beliefs. And back then, it's promoting and doing everything, and now it just comes to the point where Saban loves me. They trust me. It's like I'm like the Saban ambassador for the brand. Everything needs to be Saban approved. And, you know, we did the Superpower Beatdowns, which was Saban approved. And, you know, there's a lot of things that Saban's doing. And Power Rangers, this is just the tip of the iceberg right now. There's so many things that they're working on that it would just blow the minds of everyone. It's, you know, I was pretty happy with the movie. Everyone was there to pick it apart. To be honest, it's very hard when you're doing a reboot. They're going to pick that apart like everything. And so it was good. I didn't hear too many bad reviews. You know, I heard a few things, but they're trying to build this up to other stuff. So you can't just have everything all in one movie, you know?
No, and you know, I saw some of the criticisms of the movie. And like I said, I saw the movie. And as a Power Rangers fan, when I was young, it gave me everything that I wanted. And I think that's what you're looking to do in a reboot. You're looking to capture the fans from yesteryear and then also create new fans. And I think that's what it did.
Yep.
You know, but you talk about the Green Ranger and the White Ranger. I mean, even back in that 97 movie, it's just such an iconic thing. And it wasn't always meant to be, right? I mean, you weren't meant to be the lead guy.
It was the
Red Ranger was the lead guy. I mean, so, and you talk about what do you think it was? Is it that you had a different look than the other Rangers? Was it, you know, what was it? Why do you think the Green Ranger and then the White Ranger transcended the rest of the team and became the star of the show?
You know, I never planned to be the leader. It was like not my thing to be the leader. In fact, it caused more pressure. You know, as just in general, if something happened to the team, I'm the leader of it. So I was fine with Tommy. I was fine alone. Went to go do Cybertron. I was excited about that. Then, you know, obviously everything falls into place that, you know, kids don't know about is the politics and the money and, you know, and all that stuff started happening. And, you know, three of them kind of went on strike and wanted more money. And for me, I was fine. I didn't really care about that. I would have paid them just to do it because that's how much I love acting. I love that stuff. It was like an acting school for all of us. Even Amy Jo was like our first job, and we trained at a hardcore set. Power Rangers was, you know, it was the budget. We had to work around it. We made some cool, crazy, campy, cheesy things, but I don't think I created the role to be the leader. Honestly, I know it sounds funny, but the role was created for me. It was already destined to become that. You know, and the branding behind the Green and the White Ranger is branding like a Rolex watch, to be honest. Like, you know, when Rolex watches first came out, the Goldsmith, you know, the maker of the Rolex Goldsmith, all the watches, well, he wanted to create a watch that stood out. So he put a few in the Goldsmith watch boxes, very few Rolexes. So people opened all the box, Goldsmith watches everywhere, a few Rolexes in the box, and they were made well and became, God, I really need to get one. And it became more urgency to get one. It was more exclusive and people wanted it. And if you go look back to the Green Ranger toys, go look back to back in the days when they would deliver boxes of Toys R Us toys, there'd be tons of reds in there, tons of blues, and they were very limited of the Green Ranger and very limited White Ranger. So they became highly sought out. Even to this day, White Ranger, Green Ranger collectible toys are through the roof. You know, it's hard to get. They're making it a little bit more accessible now, but the way they branded it back in the days, they branded it for that. But now how I'm branding it, I look at, you know, my numbers of social media and I have more numbers than the movie. You know, I have more numbers than the brand. I have a lot of social media following. And between those two and being the guy behind the mask in today's society without being hammered, I never screwed anyone over at Comic Cons. I take care of everyone. I sign stuff for free. I take pictures. I do whatever. If they want to get something, they can. If not, no problems. And so that reputation for the last 6 years, being under a microscope and being on tour, you know, doing tons of shows, all comes back and it will bite you in the butt on social media. And I got such a great reputation on social media. I can truthfully say, oh, I turned in an autograph. When did I turn down an autograph? You were no. Cause that's not true. You know, I can really call people out and sincerely remember I have signed every autograph. I've never turned one person away from an autograph. Even it shows, can I take a selfie? Can I? Okay, man, let's go. So I have a really good reputation. And I think the character itself and me, JDF, is what people, you know, what people started buying into. This is the greatest Ranger of all times. But truthfully, I really tried to be. I mean, every day by day, it wasn't about money. It was trying to do as much passion as I can, going beyond the job of an actor. into my fans. I look way back, and I was crazy like that. Off times, I'd go over there and high-five kids, and then I'd do this interview, and then they're like, do you want to do an interview? And everyone's like, nope, I'm only doing one interview. I said, I'll do every media. It doesn't matter what media you're from. Like, I was asking you stuff. I don't even research. The point is, I treat every interview like it's the biggest interview of my life. I treat this like it was Barbara Walters or CNN. I'll treat this like any other interview. I won't say anything different, and I think that's what caused me to do more like Bat and the Sun. Aaron was a friend of mine. I did the same thing for him, and then now he's got all these cool things going on with Valiant and Bloodshot. So just seeing the brand mature, but also seeing me stay in the same spot that I was 10 years ago, or the passion that I had 20 years ago, that it's not driven by money or Comic-Cons, or now let me go out there and milk fans and sit at a Comic-Con. That's not me. If my tables are big, I kill the Comic-Cons because people know I'm giving. You don't need money in my line. There's a difference of when you go to Comic-Cons and you feel the stress of you can't take a picture, you can't do a shout-out. Never sold a shout-out. And I tell people never buy a video shout-out from an actor. Yeah, but we can't get one. Don't get it. Why do you want to pay for a video shout-out? Why do you want to pay for someone to say, hey, okay, what do you want me to say? Tell my mom you love her. Hey, mom, this is Jason Frank, and I love you. That's being paid. That's scripted. That's not from the heart. If an actor like I do, let me give you a shout-out. Give me your phone. You really? Yeah, let me see. What's your mom's name? That's from the heart. And that's what makes people happy. And I swear, depositing in my fans' emotional bank account will give me all the fans I need for the world. In fact, the Green Ranger, I always wonder why the green, white, why Tommy's been the most popular character is because he's been the most disciplined and consistent through the whole entire brand, even when the brand was falling. You know, so the brand knows how consistent I've been, and they know that I'll be there for them. And even if it falls now, I'm still going to be there for them. I mean, I'm a superhero. Some people say, you know, you ever regret what? That I'm a superhero? No, I don't regret that. That's a cool thing.
It's the coolest job in the world.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
I can still fit in spandex, so that's fine.
Yes, exactly. And you've kept your figure throughout these years. You know, but that's awesome for you to hear, because you do live in a world right now where, you know, celebrity is sold so much, and people do buy so much thing to try to get a glimpse of that. And sometimes, you know, they say never meet your idols. And you know, and I've met a couple people, you know, at these Comic Cons, or I met people out, you know, when they come in to do an interview, and I'm like, God, that guy was kind of crappy. Like, I didn't, and then that kind of sucks. And, you know, even just through our email correspondence, I could tell you were really, you cared about you know, you cared about our whole exchange. You cared about wanting to do the interview. Yeah. And then, I mean, and that translates, I guess, throughout the entire brand. And I think that's a fantastic answer to the question. That's why the Green White Ranger, and why Tommy Oliver, and why JDF, why you've been able to stay and maintain for so long, for 20 years. I mean, that's a hell of a run. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you know,
I think next year we're coming on the 25th year anniversary.
25 years.
So, that's incredible. 25, man. It's been really crazy. But yeah, I think that's, you know, trust me, I've met idols before that I wish I never met. You know, Van Damme at my movie premiere. It just goes way back then. You see TMZ, Jason Frank, I was in the pit down. I was terrible years and years ago. I just hate when I meet someone that I really look up to that's just not the person I thought they were, because you're watching television or movies. And there's plenty of people I've met at Comic-Cons, and I won't mention names, to think I will never be like that guy. If I'm grouchy and old like that guy, I'd never want to be in his position to hurt fans. I would not be here. I'd rather not be here. If it's about money or whatever they're working on, I'd rather not be there than hurt people's feelings. So I made a point of watching in this industry, the Comic-Cons. I was told by several big Comic-Cons years ago that I will never sell. You're wasting your money. Don't come up. And I told Tam, I said, I'm going. I'm going to New York. I'm buying my ticket. I'm buying whatever I got to do. I'm going. And I invested in myself. And for several Comic-Cons, paid my own ways. I just said, give me a table, man. I want to see my fans. The first show that I've ever done with people saying, you know, you're only here an hour. You're not going to have a lot of fans. I walked up and I saw my line, and it was just empty. And I was like, oh, God, it's such an ego heart. You know, everyone was told I'm not going to be there saying I won't have fans. I'm up against 100 top celebrities. All of a sudden, I was walking to my table, kind of head down. I remember this in walking with my wife, and I was like thinking inside, oh, God, I failed. I hate failing. I was wrong. And then I said, hey, how you doing? I was just going to do my hour at the table. I didn't want to sit there the whole time. And then I looked to the left, and I saw all these people cheering, and huge line. Went all the way back to this, like 7-8 hour long line. And I saw Green Ranger stuff. Some of the shirts said, what is that line? They said, well, that's for you. And I was like, oh, really? Because, you know, they would only advertise my name at that time, Jason David Frank. And I was so concerned. Can you put the Green Ranger? Can you put Tommy? Nope. Just got to put Jason David Frank. And I was like, darn. And that time, I killed it back then just with the name Jason David Frank. And the line was out the door for 6 hours. And when they ended it 1 hour later, people were going crazy. All the promoter cards were coming in. But it's not as easy just to book a show. Like a lot of other Rangers, a lot of other people think, oh, look how easy it is. It ain't easy. You have to invest. And that means you have to be able to afford to do these Comic-Cons for nothing. That's what you have to do. Because you got to go out there and make people happy. And this is what started as a hobby. It never started as a job. And it's becoming so big now that I'm saying it's a hobby. Well, we'll pay you. I don't care. I don't get paid for Comic-Cons. Don't disrespect me like that. But we'll pay you X amount. I don't care. So it puts the power back in my hands. Just like it was on the Green Ranger. They want to pay more money. I don't want the money. I want to be in control of my life, and I don't want to feel like I'm sold by someone. If you emailed me and said, hey, I'm going to pay you $500, $1,000, $2,000, $10,000, $20,000 for an interview, I would call you back and say, hey, dude, I'd do that for free, man. No, I want to pay you. I don't want to do it. I don't want to do your interview. How come? I'll give you $20,000. I don't want to do it. Next thing you know, people are going to think I just did an interview for $20,000. I'd rather not do it. And that's what I tell people. And I think that's where the sincerity comes. And I've met people before that I wish I never met, but I promise my fans that they're not going to come up to my table. Even during when I was losing my mom, she had cancer. 3 days, I was at the Comic-Con. Not one person can tell what was going on. They knew something was going on because they follow me. I'm sorry to hear about your mom. Phoenix Comic-Con, someone trying to kill me. Not one fan knew that. They knew about the incident, but they won't feel it through my energy. They won't. Like, oh, I wish I met JDF on a different day. Every Comic-Con the same. Losing my mom to cancer, someone trying to kill me, someone this, someone that. Every Comic-Con remains the same because I'm always in charge of my emotions at that time. At that time, I go through a lot of ups and downs, and I struggle with ADD. I deal with all that stuff. But on action time, when I'm on in front of a crowd and I'm there for people at that time, it helps me get through what I need to get through. You know, like my mom's situation, or sharing stories from other people and hearing the stories that motivate and move me, or hearing one person that says, hey, man, thank you for staying here to the last fan. I've been watching you for 2-3 hours in line. You see, that's all people do. So when they're standing in line, they're just watching their hero. They're watching the hero, every face they make, every picture you take, watching the hero give stuff away. They're just like, wow, this is what, it's not for the person in front. It's also to show everyone, hey man, this is the way life needs to be. I'm talking to everyone, I'm, you know, communicating. So all the other big celebrities are coming and thinking, who's this guy, you know, to come into the Comic-Con and now he's got someone that wants to kill him. Why him? I said the same thing. Why not a bigger celebrity, man? There's a lot of big celebrities. Don't you want to just kill someone else? Not me. You know, it's because of the social media. I'm social media driven. You know, the guy that wanted to kill me said that he wanted to kill JDF, which means that he was a fan and he is a fan. And something went wrong in his mind. So whatever happened, happened. But it shows you that the branding in my JDF brand is for everyone. And whatever someone tries to do, from saying hi to saying I was the best to trying to kill me, it's all the same energy I get to everyone. It's just how they take it and how they, you know, convert it back to me.
I mean, that's an, you know, I remember hearing about those stories, you know, especially the guy trying to kill you. I mean, it's just like, but for you to be able to continue with that same energy and that dedication, I mean, I have to ask you, where does that come from? Was that something that was instilled in you as a kid? Was that something that you,
I think my martial arts, man.
Yeah.
I think my martial arts, I was talking to a few bodybuilders who do like bodybuilding competition, and they're like, man, you can do this and you could do that. And, you know, and bodybuilding is hard because, you know, not that I'm doing it, but I was just listening to their stories, and you get broken down being a bodybuilder. There's a lot of stories that are familiar with karate. You know, there's a lot of times I got lip busted, eye stitches. I mean, just get knocked down and get right back up. And I was listening to Joel Osteen today, and he was saying, you know, I kept thinking, oh, I get knocked, you know, get knocked down and stand back up, get knocked down, stand back up. The only difference is I didn't get knocked out. I just got knocked down. And so for me, the discipline aspect is I can't let things affect me. I mean, there's, you know, when I went to the Comic-Con, that whole stuff happened. It just what it was. I found out afterwards, my family's crying. I don't care. Like for me, personally. I wish he came up that disarm him, but that's there's different people around. There's kids. And then for my whole point, and this is honest, every time I've been doing Comic-Con, I kept telling Tammy, everyone, there's a reason why. I feel like God's put me out here on Comic-Cons. I don't know why. I mean, it's overloaded and tons of crowd. And I've been saying for years, something's going to happen at Comic-Cons. There's no rules. There's no mandates. There's no weapon checks. There's nothing. I've seen people coming with guns before. And we're talking a lot of unstable people as well, that I'm unstable as well. But I'm just saying having people run around with weapons is not a good thing. And since that happened at Phoenix, things have changed tremendously in the whole Comic-Con world. Love me or hate me, fans get mad because they can't bring guns now and they get mad at me. It's not my fault. You know, it's and people are apologizing. I'm so sorry. It's Comic-Con and our people. Hey, it's not Comic-Con in general. It's the people. It doesn't matter where it's going to be. It could be a sporting event. It could be anywhere. As long as we not checking them, we're going to open the door to that. Now that we can stop them at the door and make sure they don't have weapons, it's because of this incident, it's going to be a lot harder to do. So I was actually blessed that it did happen to me because I have the social media power to make a difference, you know. But this guy, his court's, I just got a letter today that's being pushed to September, and, you know, got to make sure that he, you know, does his proper time and he gets his proper help, whatever the reasons are behind his motives of trying to kill me, I guess. But I'm glad it did happen to me and not other people, because I can handle it. I can handle pressure. I'm the soldier guy where you might see me drop to my knee for a quick seconds and shed a few tears and then go, stand back up. Let's go grab your gun. Let's fight. It's like, you okay? It's like, yeah, I'm fine. Grab your gun. Let's fight. We don't have food, water. I don't care what we have. We have to make the best of whatever we have. That's just the way it is. And I've been knocked down and standing up my whole entire life and just dealing with everything, just dealing with losing my brother, just everything has just been knocked down, stand up. You know, Joel explained it as when the hurricanes come, it breaks everything else, but there's a specific palm tree that doesn't break. It just bends. And even though the hurricane looks and thinks that he destroyed everything, when the hurricane stopped, those trees, those palm trees stand back up again. You can't blow them down. You can't break the palm trees, you know? So certain palms, not all of them. So that's why you have to figure out where it came from. I really truly feel it came from being a martial artist and not reaching a belt, dealing with rejection, getting a belt, losing the competition, coming back, winning first place, going to a competition, getting disqualified, going to Hollywood, auditioning for a script, saying you're not good enough, just like Power Rangers. I went in with long hair in the agency, and he said, you need to cut your hair. You'll never get a role on anything if you don't cut your hair. And I had a ponytail, and I was like, cut it? All right. So I cut my hair. And then I went there I cut my hair. And he said, I'm sorry, man, we're busy right now. And I said, wait. I said, you told me cut my hair, right? Yeah, I said, I cut my hair. So where's the job? Where's the contract? We don't have a contract. I was so persistent. I just got done telling my dad. If it wasn't for my attitude and the way my dad raised me, I wouldn't have been persistent enough to say, hey, I'm not leaving nowhere until you do what a deal is a deal. And he got so stressed out that he just pulled a random piece of paper that was called Phantoms and said, here, we're even, right? And that happened to be Power Rangers. And once I got the show, of course, they wanted their commission. So I went back as an honest guy and said, I'm more than happy to give you your commission for a certain amount of years, even though you didn't want me, but now you want me. And then it just turned into a big lawsuit and, you know, they want a commission my whole entire life. And I just went in to represent myself. They had big attorneys. I had nobody. I was a kid. I said, I just represent myself, Your Honor. And they showed me everything. And I said, everything is right. This is the story. I stuck to the story. And they went up to submit evidence or whatever. And there were different colored paper. And I just said, Your Honor, I didn't see those papers. And he said, yes, you did. I said, no, I didn't. I said, the paper I saw was yellow. So she transferred all the paperwork from whatever reason and made fake whatever evidence stuff. But I knew the story. I won the case. It had nothing to do with money. I went back to try to make things right. And they tried tricking me on contracts, you know. And so when you have a transparent story and an honest story that doesn't change year after year, day after day, it's the truth. Transparency sometimes is what you see. You know, we've all made mistakes. We've all done bad things before, but I think progression is not perfection. I think you have to progress and you'll never be perfection. I mean, you're never going to be perfect. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's a constantly
absolutely
learning thing for me.
Yeah. But I mean, that's just, you know, we talked about you know meeting your idols or talking to, I watched you obviously most of my life when I was a kid, and you know you're definitely living up to everything that I always hoped that you might be. So that awesome
you,
story. I really appreciate that. Now I know you got to get out of here, so I have one more thing to ask. So
okay.
I've always wondered, you know, because I think in the fans of the series, we've always looked at the Green Ranger and the White Ranger. For some reason, the White Ranger, you know, he always seemed like he might have been a little more powerful, right? And I remember a story, and this is, you'll probably appreciate this. So at a Comic-Con here in Houston, Comic Palooza, a couple years ago, we were running a wrestling show. I work with Booker T, and there was a tag team called the Lockharts, right? And they came out. It was Comic-Con. One of the brothers, his name's Eric, he came out, and he was wearing a green Power Ranger shirt and a green bandana. Well, the match is going on. He gets knocked out. He goes to the floor. You know, he's out of commission, and you don't see him for a little while. And then toward the end of the match, when it's coming up for the finish, he comes from out of the ring, and he's wearing a white Power Ranger shirt and a white bandana.
That's cool.
And he goes, and he kicks everybody's ass, and he wins the match.
Yeah.
So there's something about the white Power Ranger.
That's cool.
For you, which one was better? Which one do you have more affinity for? Is it the Green Ranger? That's where you started, or that iconic White Ranger?
Well, I just, the Green, the White Ranger shield and everything felt way better than the Green Ranger shield. It felt definitely more solid. It was great. We captivated the audience around the world. It was the highest rating. That highest rating episode of all times was the White Light, where I came back. People around the world trying to figure out who this guy is coming and all this stuff. And so anyway, then that was great. You know, starting the show, I'm telling you, no one really believed in the show. There was not a lot of people that believed in it. So I used to take my helmet and all these pictures I have around set. Every picture you mostly see out there is taken from my camera that's just been re-released and tweeted, and those are all my pictures. So I used to just, I used to sit there and think, this is cool. This costume's super cool. So the green kind of, scarred the heart of this is the first costume I ever was. And then going back to the White Ranger, though, was pretty awesome. The storyline, going back, grabbing a shield, the White Ranger definitely was awesome too, but it's hard. I just think because I started as the Green Ranger, no one knew what the word Ranger, Power Ranger was. And I talked to Haim Saban, and he told me when I was 19 years old, he said, this is beyond Power Rangers. This is beyond anything. He says, Jason, I want to make Power Rangers a household name. I want everyone around the world in every house to say Power Rangers. And they go, yeah, I heard of it. Maybe I've seen it. Oh, I know Power Rangers. He is making that a household name. And that's what I respect about Haim. A lot of people, talk about this and talk about, hey, dude, he's given me a life. He taught me business. He taught me a lot of things. And you know what? If you could survive in this kind of world where it's hard and it's cruel, and Hollywood is a lot of rejection, you have to be tough to get through it. Because on the end of the day, you have to go look at yourself in the mirror and think, why didn't I get this role? You don't think right now, I wonder why I'm not working on all these top shows and why I have the following more than most actors have. I have a huge following. That's what's bringing it to the Valiant Project, me playing Bloodshot. All the fans are crossing over now to the Valiant comic series. Producers will get it one day. And when they get it, I've just done the opposite of what fans, actors do. Some actors start a show and they build an audience. Well, I've done it backwards. I've built a huge audience waiting for a new show or a new movie. And that's just what I've been doing. And it'll get me to the process faster than being all these little movies and little B movies and little bad movies to, I want something good, but I wanted something I could be passionate about.
No, and could we ask for anything better? We all just want to be passionate about our work and do the best job we possibly can. So I appreciate your time so much. Where can people
find out more,
though, about what's going on with JDF and stuff you have upcoming?
I have Instagram and Twitter, and it's JDFFFN. It's JDFFFN. And then I have one Facebook page. It's three first names, Jason David Frank, official fan page. And that's where, I do most of my posting and Comic-Cons and keeping people, included in what I got going on. We have few announcements that are coming up that are non-disclosure agreements. There are going to be huge announcements coming up in the next several months and then next year as well. So I'm really excited about a lot of stuff.
Well, hey, whenever those announcements come around, make sure you come back and give me a holler.
Yeah, for sure, buddy.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Oh, Brian, what have you done now?